Taxation is theft. Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hello, and welcome back. Taxation is theft. You might notice behind me, I'm in a hotel room right now. I'm actually in New York on business, and outside of campaigning. Yeah, there's the day job. So I'm out here in New York, and I set up. It's a really small hotel room. This is the only place I could set up the podcast. And like, I'm looking behind me, and I'm like, there's the bed. I have to make the bed. And there's this story that, you know, people tell you, like, the very first thing you should do every day is make your bed. And I'm never for making your bed. And the reason they say this is, one, it gives you a feeling of accomplishment because, hey, it's the start of the day and you've already finished your very first task. And two, at the end of the day, even if you have a really bad day, you come home and you have a nice made bed to get into. I really don't care about that, but philosophically it does work, right? So what I do is I say, I'm going to finish something else because time is extremely valuable. I pick some other small task to do first thing in the morning, and that's the first thing that I do. Maybe it's wake up and take a shower and brush my teeth and whatever it is. Maybe it's make breakfast. It's a small task to start the day, and you check it off as soon as you get out of bed. Done. You don't have to waste your time making the bed. And at the end of the night, when you hop in bed, hey, if it's messy, whatever. But I made my bed anyway, just because you guys have to look at it for the next half hour to an hour. So don't be impressed by that. Anyway, today I have with me, live from Uganda, I have Iga Ronald. And Iga, I met when I went to Uganda in January. And he was at the event that I spoke at, and he's currently the national coordinator for Students for Liberty Uganda. So, you know, he's really involved in a lot of different events out there. And we're going to hear from him right now and see kind of what he's up to and what's going on in the name of liberty over in Uganda. So, Iga, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you too.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So, tell me, how's it going over there?
We are good. Once again, I'm Iga Ronald, National Coordinator for Students for Liberty. Students for Liberty is an organization from the Students for Liberty around the world. We are doing advocating for freedom, rule of law, individual liberty, free market, and free society. You know, we are following up the principles of liberty, and we are trying to advocate for that free society for everyone through the liberal, the classical liberal ideas that we are using from different books of reference, like many of them that we are using, and a free network for society. And we are basing in different universities in the country, including Mackay University, one of the biggest universities in the East Africa. We are also in Mbarara University of Science and Technology, in Kumba University in Entebbe, Chambogo University in Kampala, and many other. We are creating these groups of young students, turning them into libertarian, and to think like libertarians, to see that we can create that reasonable society that everyone can admire. Through this, we introduce them to the ideas of liberty, and we encourage them to form up groups. And these groups we call chapters in Students for Liberty, and then we move with them towards the movement of liberty.
Awesome. So when you start working with these students, are they already like what's their mindset? Are they already somewhat libertarian? Are they already looking for libertarianism, or are they kind of a blank slate? They don't have any opinion on political sort of things, or you know, what kind of position are they in?
Okay. First of all, many of these students, we are introducing liberty to them the first time. You know, in my country, for all over the time, we didn't know about liberty, and probably some of us who went to school, we know about, but we didn't know how to fight and advocate for liberty. So you find out that when we get to these universities, these students don't really know what liberty is and how to do it. Many people talk about liberty, talk about democracy, talk about rule of law, but they really don't understand what it is. So what we do, we introduce what liberty is, what rule of law is, what freedom is, what democracy is, and then we entice them, we find a way of encouraging them to join our movement. So many of them didn't really know about what liberty is. But after the introduction of Students for Liberty in the country, and more especially on my leadership now, we have tried to introduce this fully to these students and these are young professionals and some other lecturers in universities, and they are now getting vast of what liberty is and how they can advocate for liberty and free society.
So what's the outside of these students, what's kind of like the typical the average person in Uganda? What are their thoughts on this? Do they do people typically go around thinking about government or thinking about that they're free, or is it just something that they just go on living their lives and it's not really something they think about?
Apart from this revolution of young people in this country, some time back people didn't really mind about what the government is and what the government has to do, and if I come to your side, what tax is and what tax has to be used for, and so on. Now it is the Students for Liberty and of course some other think tanks like ARED, Action for Liberty and Economic Development in Entebbe, that is led by Mugabe John, that we are trying to introduce what this old system is all about. In this country, people really didn't, especially our parents or mature people between 45 years and above, didn't really think about what government is or what freedom is or what liberty is. They really don't mind about that, and they didn't have any way of advocating for any of those factors. But because now the country is full of teenagers and we are rising up to think more from what we are just taught in the school and what we are just taught by our parents, we have come to land on these different aspects of life that we should be inquiring about. We should be asking about why this is like this. Why, for example, why do we have a lot of tax? What must be done with the tax after probably it is being collected, and so on. So apart from us, many other people don't really think about it. And when you check our people in the public service and people in the parliament and maybe armed personnel, they are really silent about what is probably happening in the country, simply because they were taught to just to keep silent about it, and they really don't mind about it. They just when they get food on the table, that's all. But no, some of us, we are having the food on the table, yes, but then we are inquiring, why is it like this? Why is it like this? And so on.
That's interesting. So, yeah, it's, you know, in the U.S., everybody, a lot of people think that, you know, this it's the freest country in the world. You know, the government is all good. It's all for us on our side. But at the same time, it's very similar to the structure that you're describing, where people, they maybe they think about it a little bit more, but they think about it in the wrong way. But it's government ultimately that's teaching them. Government creates the schools. Government creates the education system, and includes this is what government is, and you just follow the rules, and that's just the way it is, and don't question it. So it sounds like it's very similar in that type of way. So go ahead.
I wanted to comment that even when you check about some other countries like my neighbor, the Kenya, the Republic of Kenya, Nairobi, you check about Rwanda, you check about Burundi, Congo, Tanzania, it is almost the same thing. So these people are just teaching what they want us to learn. And they are definitely taking away that particular thing on the syllabus when they don't want us to know about it. For example, before I joined the high school, we had a subject called political science. But when people went to study about political, they started questioning about politics. Now, the government realized that people should not know about politics or how politics must work. And then they canceled the political science on the syllabus. Wow. So you can see that they are just finding a way of governing us in a kind of a shadow or behind the walls about some things, especially with politics and governance of the country.
So what does that mean for you and your organization? Like, are they, they're probably not happy that you're doing what you're doing. Are they doing anything to stop you, or is it difficult to get this message out?
Now, in Uganda, it is really very difficult for us to run this kind of movements, but we are trying to hide or rather to disguise ourselves with what they want to hear. For example, when we talk about liberty, many of the government inspectors and even the president himself doesn't want to hear about liberty. Because when you talk about liberty in my country, many people think about liberation. And when you think about liberation, that means war in most cases. So what we do is to disguise ourselves in, for example, free market and economic empowerment and so on. Like in Chambogo University, we tried to register a chapter there, a group of students of liberty. And then the principal of the university and all the people refused us. And they said, we don't want that here because the government doesn't allow. And then we had to disguise ourselves and register the students for liberty, but we disguised it to students for economic empowerment. So we are economically empowering the students in that particular university, but indirectly students for liberty. So they are not really happy with us. And when you check my university, Makerere University, when I want to set up an event there, I have to spice it in one way or the other to look like a kind of a game or a kind of economic or kind of just some simple topics to talk about, not directly about liberty, about rule of law, about democracy, because every time we post on our Facebook pages, they are always following us. And when you check with Mugabe, he has been always hunted by the government, and one time they arrested him and they took him to some places where no one can identify simply because of this. So they always send ambassadors in our events, and we always know we have soldiers there, we have spies in our conferences, in our seminars, we know about them. So because we know about them, what we do is to talk smoothly about some things, and then we give those notice and then books to those particular students to understand what we really mean by maybe rule of law and so on. But of course, disguising so that the government cannot easily grab us. But when you see, we are not allowed to set up any event without informing police. We don't have to directly talk about the government because it is like against the law. And then we cannot easily use any place we want. Sometimes they want to allocate places we should use, and so on. So it is not really happy with them, but we are doing it because we have to do it. And with the current government, it is really not easy. And most of the times we are receiving different calls, different people calling us and consulting us about SFL or Freedom or ALED and so on. And then they are like, they want to find a way of trapping us. But because we got to know about them, we are trying to disguise ourselves and hide ourselves in that particular kind of angle so that they don't easily get us. Otherwise, it is not a good message that our government or our government officials are welcoming, because they really want to keep the people, especially the young people, the young students, because we are the leaders in the next generation of this country. So they want us to keep behind, yet we want to be at the top of them because they are old and so on. So what they do is to try to threaten us. And what shows exactly that is when they brought the social media tax last year. They knew and they got to see that students are discussing and changing information through Facebook, WhatsApp, Twitter, Instagram, and so on. So what they did was to impart taxi on social media so that maybe they can limit a number of people that are using this social media. And it is definitely, it worked for them, because when you check, if we were probably 100 people using Facebook, we are now 70. So that 30 we are discouraged. Why are they discouraged? Because of the tax they have to pay every day. So this is how they are trying to get us. And some of us, we are trying to get out of them. Simple as that.
How are they able to implement a tax like that? Because it sounds like, I mean, is it something that they were working with Facebook and WhatsApp to, so they know how much you're using it? Or is it just the internet companies there that are able to monitor what you're using? How exactly are they able to tax that?
Now, in Uganda, we have what we call the Uganda Communication Commission. This is a ministry that governs all communications in the country, taking the TV, social media, radio, and so on. So what they did was to introduce a firewall. This kind of firewall, you need to pay 200 shillings per day for 24 hours. To access what they call the OTT. OTT is, actually I'm forgetting, but it is OTT. And before you pay OTT, you cannot be able to use Facebook, or I couldn't talk to you if I didn't pay the 200 shillings. You cannot receive WhatsApp messages, not until you pay the 200. How are they able to do this? We are using internet service providers. We don't have Wi-Fi, or they are not common. We don't have satellites, our own satellites. All the satellites are owned by the government. And then the government gives server to the telecommunication companies, and the telecommunication companies provide the internet to us. So they are regulating them in a certain angle, forcing those people to get 200 shillings from us to the government. And when you pay, the message also comes that you have paid internet access, the OTT tax to the URA, Uganda Revenue Authority, and then you are now able to access internet, all internet services to that period of time. If you haven't paid the 200 shillings, then you cannot access the social media, but you can access Google and any other. So this is how they do it. It is possible to bypass this tax by using a particular, VPN. Yeah, particular VPN. But when you connect using a VPN, the internet is either too slow or it moves too fast that it takes a lot of bandwidth. So if you've been using, for example, 100 MBs of data, then when you connect a VPN, you may use 300 MBs of data. So what you do is to pay the 200 so that you can use the daily bandwidth to move normally like you always it does. So that's what happens.
Interesting. So I just did a Google search. I was trying to see if I could find out what OTT stands for, but it's I don't see that. But I did find an article here that says
Yeah, like
5 million mm-hmm. internet users. Uganda loses 5 million internet users as a result of the tax.
Yes, exactly.
So that's exactly. That's a lot of people that are affected by that. And and just to put this in perspective, I mean, we're 200 shillings is I want to put this in perspective for people in the U.S. It's I think it's 3,600 shillings per dollar. So that's basically 5 cents per day. 5 cents per day in mm-hmm. the U.S. is this tax that cut 5 million people off the internet. And how many people are in Uganda? What's the national population?
260 million, about that, maybe 54, 56, around there. But you know, they are always, the statistics are always not accurate. For example, me, I was not counted the previous census.
Okay.
So we expect it to be around 60, yeah, or 58, around that million.
Wow. So, so yeah, it's a lot of people, but it's, you know, that's a lot of people who were affected by this tax, and it's a small tax, but, you know, it's a tax, it's an inconvenience, it's more money that people would rather spend on, you know, anything else. So, you know, it's when I say taxation is theft, it's not about, you know, oh yeah, I, you know, we need roads, we need this. It's not always about that. It's, you know, would you rather spend that money on a pothole, or would you rather spend that money to, for leisure, for whatever you want, whatever you want to spend your money on, or even to feed your family? You know, this is, it's the government dictating you how you spend your money and what you spend it on. But also it's, in this particular case, it's to discourage certain use. You know, we know that in the U.S. they'll tax things like cigarettes or alcohol, and they'll tell us it's for, you know, it's for our own good, right? They want to discourage these behaviors. They want us to not drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes. In reality, they want the money. They don't care about us, as they've shown time and time again. They really just don't care about us. So it's not for our safety. It's money.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, it's not necessarily even about money. It's about control. It's about discouraging a behavior that
exactly, and that's what I always talk about. That probably there for me, the 200 shillings is not too much, and I really could give in for the development of my country. But now in this case, the government is just forcing us to do that, and we don't have to ask for accountability, because I recently checked the statistics of Uganda Revenue Authority, and only OTT could produce around 1.5 billion every day in the country, or 3 point something every week. But we don't have to question about this. We cannot ask for accountability. If we could pay this tax, and then the government can easily tell us that probably the money, the social media tax was collected last month, was used to do this and this, then that could be clear. But if they can't do that, then taxation is safety, as you say, and they are really taking it for their own good, yet they are taking it in the name of making service available for everyone. Definitely, I understand that there are people in the village and people elsewhere who don't use smartphones, so they don't pay the tax. But now some of us who live in Kampala and we are using the social media and we are paying tax, then we expect that money to be collected and serve the other people elsewhere in the village. But it is not there. And when you ask about that, about this, then the government is simply taking you as one that inciting violence. This is what they come into. So it is just funny. And some of us, we can't easily understand it very well.
Right. And that's, you know, that's really dangerous. That's, you know, in the U.S., there are a lot of people who, you know, part of the Liberty Movement, the government classifies them as domestic terrorists, which is, you know, that's the universal word that the U.S. government mm-hmm. sticks on anyone they don't like. But it's they mm-hmm. want the rest of society to fear us. So while we're going around saying, hey, you should be free. They're tricking people into saying, oh, this guy's talking about freedom. He must be one of those terrorists. And it makes absolutely no sense, but people fall for it.
Yeah.
It's really crazy if you think about it. So you're working on a lot of events. Do you have any events coming up?
Yeah, we are having, by the way, on the 16th of April, the 16th of June, mm-hmm. we are having a grand meeting with the people from the Liberland cabinet, vice president, minister of internal affairs, and many other. They are visiting the Students for Liberty, and we are having a grand meeting, economic meeting with them to discuss issues about democracy and about development and investment and free market and so on. So that is one of the events that is coming up in 2 weeks' time, I think. And then we are having also a summit, a Liberland summit in a Serena Hotel, Entebbe, and the Students for Liberty is officially invited. So I will be there with some people around me from the Students for Liberty. We are also having a public lecture in Makerere University on the 3rd of July this year at Food Science Conference Hall in Makerere University, main campus in Kampala. We are also having a colloquium, students' colloquium at Nkumba University on the 4th of July this year. Next week on the 22nd, I will be with some other team members from Uganda. We will be heading to Tanzania, Dar es Salaam, for different events there, still for Students for Liberty and Liberty Sparks. Liberty Sparks is a think tank it is performing in Tanzania, in Dar es Salaam City. So we will be there for Uhuru Conference and Liberty Gala and dinners there for about 6 or 7 days. And then I'll be coming back for the events that are set in Kampala. We are having so many of them during July and December, and we are still planning for them and then set up the dates very well.
Wow, that's awesome.
So probably we are having about 6 or 7 events coming up this period before the year ends.
So this you said there's one that's 6 days long. That's a big event. How many people do you expect to show up to that one?
That one is really big. As I told you, it is also sponsored by Network for Free Society. I think you know about, you can simply check on Google. So it is happening in Tanzania, and it is sponsored by that organization and then prepared and organized by Liberty Sparks, as I told you, owned by Evans Oakwood. He was one of SFL member, and he's now focusing on his think tank. So it is going to be there in Dar es Salaam, and it is taking all that long. Yeah, so we are expecting about 500 people around there, all 600. Yeah, it is really big, and it is collecting many people from Africa. Because from Uganda, I'm going to go with the people from Rwanda, from Burundi, from Congo, from Sudan, from Kenya, Nairobi. And then we are going to join up in one free to go to Tanzania. But of course, there are people from Ghana, Nigeria, and many, many other African countries. It is so big, and everyone, actually, all Africa is going to be represented there. So, we are also having some people from our colleges in the United States of America. If I could check to confirm, we have some speakers from there. If you give me a moment, I can also give you some of them. So it is really a bigger event, and we are having professors from different universities in the USA to come and share some word of wisdom with so many people from Africa.
That's awesome. I mean, it sounds like, it sounds huge. So we've heard kind of like about some of the issues that you have in Uganda. If a lot of these other countries are going there, how many of these other countries are facing those same kind of issues? Government control over economics, over freedom of speech. How many countries are kind of in the same situation in Africa? Because I think we hear that, like, I don't know. I know there's quite a bit of diversity. There are still some countries like South Africa that's more colonialized. Some places like North Africa that are more, I guess they're it's a completely different thing, because it's more of like a Muslim culture that's I guess it's completely different. How much diversity do we have at this event from all the countries of Africa, and how are their issues kind of the same? Are they different? Do you know?
I'm not so certain, but what I have to say by now, according to the statistics that I have and the research I have made, most of the African countries are the same. If you check the statistics for Africa, you find that the problem that is facing Uganda is the problem facing Rwanda, is the problem facing Kenya, is the problem facing Burundi, Tanzania, and so on. Some countries, especially with democracy, are trying to stand out or trying to get out of the wall. Like this time, some Kenya people are trying to get out of that. They can really speak. They can come on the street and speak. When you check South Africa, it happens there. When you check Nigeria, somehow, but many of the African countries are the same. And the problem, the biggest problem that we have, is economics and leadership, or governance, or rule of law, or, you know, democracy. So as I speak now, many countries like Kenya, it is also limited with their Students for Liberty and so on. It is not easily done there, as the same as Uganda. When I check with some my friends in Rwanda, it is the same thing. Sometimes even they can arrest you from there if you are not certain, or you find them unhappy, they can take you. When you check our brothers and sisters in Burundi with Mr. Nkurunziza, it is the same thing. And recently I was also in Tanzania, and it is the same thing. Last time when you check in Nigeria, they even canceled elections. So it is the same thing that is happening all over Africa. And when you check on statistics, it is the young people, the youth who are trying to push this to see that we can have that particular change. Because at the end of the day, these people, these old people, are going to be aware of these offices or rather. They will be away from this country, and it will be us to take up their positions, or our grandchildren to take up these positions. So we are seeing that we need really to change this. Otherwise, we are moving in that particular direction, which is not favorable.
Interesting. Is there, so, you know, you talk about, you know, the younger people are going to grow up and take those positions. Is there a specific challenge with that? Obviously, you need to get the information to more young people, but is there resistance to the information, are the leaders kind of, do they have their families where, you know, they kind of, you know, keep themselves separate from everybody else so that they can teach their children this more authoritarian, controlling way, and then kind of get, you know, making sure that it's their children who take those positions in these offices?
Exactly. And now this is happening in Africa as well. And using my country as a reference, for example, our president, the current president, Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, is even his children are not studying from this country. Those who still go to school. Even the grandchildren are not studying in this country. Many of them are studying outside this country. Why? Because they want to impart that particular information they want them to hear. So what you see is that when they have a boy child, he is being appointed in a certain big office of the government, so that it is easy for him to access either the president or to access the presidency. And when you check with our president currently, his son is one of the biggest army commanders in the country. And it is rumor moving around that by the time Museveni goes, the boy is going to replace him, because he will be the biggest general there. I don't know how they grade there, but he's a general and an army commander of whole troop, the Air Force kind of army department. He commands all of them, and he also gives command to the SFC, the Special Forces Command. So you see that it is indirectly but true that the man wants to be replaced by his son. And when you check, it is the same thing that has been happening. When you check even in Kenya, when you check even in Rwanda, you see that these people, there is a way they organize their children and they set them in those positions where it is easy for them to access those offices better or quicker than we can do, some of us who are not related to them.
That's interesting. And yeah, you know, it makes sense. And this has always kind of happened throughout history. And, you know, in the US, we talk a lot about inheritance taxes. And I was just reading, it's actually Arvin Vora's book. He's one of the presidential candidates who's running against me for the Libertarian nomination. And he mentions a lot about this idea that, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, I worked hard to build everything that I built, and I'm going to make my kids start from scratch and have to earn so that they can learn the respect of earning money and, you know, these things. And he said, like, that's kind of what we're trained to do. In reality, we should be passing this on to our, you know, everything that we earn, all the knowledge that we collect, all the money that we collect, we should pass it on to our children so that they can kind of, you know, they have a little bit of a head start, and they can get even further in life than we were able to get. But the downside to that is when you look at people who are ruling over countries, and when they're doing the same thing with their children, it really, it's obviously different. If, you know, if you're a good person and you're not imposing yourself on other people's lives, you're working hard in voluntary exchange to better yourself, compared to somebody who's ruling a country, who's basically controlling other people. They're forcing other people to behave a certain way. They're gaining power, and, you know, basically through the threats of violence, they're controlling other people. Now they're passing this on to their children. So it's interesting that those types of people typically are the ones who want to, you know, they want the death tax, they want the inheritance tax, because they don't want your children to start with a little bit of an advantage. But meanwhile, they're doing the exact same thing. And of course, with them, it's not necessarily the money, it's the power that they're transferring. And that's, of course, much more dangerous.
Exactly.
So that's really...
Exactly. And I just want you, I just request you, Daniel, you try to check about our president on YouTube, CNN, BBC. You just try to check about him. You will see how he talks. One time he said that he's not working for anyone. Those who think that he is working for them, they are actually denying themselves, or rather they just don't understand. But for him, he's working for himself, his children, and his grandchildren. He always says that. And this is, I would not expect any leader, any democratic leader, to speak or to say such a words. One time he also said that he's going to protect, when things go wrong, he's going to protect only and only his party members. But in this country, you cannot easily identify who supports which party and which party. So you see that a kind of leaders that we have in Africa are just trying to create either a kingdom or a tyrant, a government, where it is only exchanged by themselves. A dad represses a son, replaces a dad, and someone replaces an uncle, and like that, just in one family. So that's where the problem starts from, especially with leadership and democracy, because these children of theirs, they didn't learn how to work. I also anticipate they are not good in class, or they didn't go to school to study very well, but because the opportunity is just there for them, money is available, power is available, they are just on top of us. When you check, like for me in my country, where I come from, my tribe, I can't easily access most of the offices in this country simply because I'm not from their side. But when you check the offices, 99% are occupied by the people and members of the family of the ruling party and the president himself. And when you check us, like my tribe, we are very few or no one is there. Or if he's there, it's just a disguise and he gets commands from someone from their region or tribe or, you know, family and so on. So it becomes so difficult. And when you sit down and imagine, you find yourself being somehow discouraged that probably even if you work so hard, you are not going to get that reasonable pay, or you are not going to get anywhere simply because you see that the system is totally faulty for you to get an opportunity. We just try as much as we can to do what we do, especially this kind of advocacy, which I started many years ago. And we are just saying, if we cannot reap, then let our children reap. If they can't reap in what we sow, then let our grandchildren reap from what we are sowing right now. But enjoying kind of democracy in this country, kind of free market, kind of free society in this country, it is still a long way to go, and that is the truth.
So I kind of want to dig into this a little bit, because you call yourself a democracy, right? There's still elections to elect your parliament members, to elect your president. It's all still done by election, right?
Yeah, this guy's election. This is what these people are doing. They set up elections, but they don't announce what came from the elections. They announce what they want. Like last elections, we had electoral chairman announcing results different from what is displayed on the TV or from our polling agents. And then we tried to ask and said, I don't know, but that's what I have to announce. And he went off the TV and radio and he ran away. And after that, he was demolished and he is no longer the chairman of Electoral Commission. So you see that the results are saying something different, and then someone is announcing something different. Why? They use election as a disguise, but they are not really announcing what the results of the elections. And I have experienced that for now three times. We have carried elections three times when I can understand and physically see. And the previous two elections, that is 10 years ago, I have been a polling agent. I belong to a certain party and I'm a polling agent. And I could witness that with my naked eyes, that this particular candidate had this year and had this year and had this year. But now the Electoral Commission boss is announcing something totally different. And we don't have a question about that. This is what happened. And this is how Museveni has been probably winning. But in actual sense, he's not winning. If I'm to say, Uganda would have three presidents by now. But he's just one. Because they win him and they announce him and brings guns and armed forces on the streets, beating people, tear gassing, and so on, until you cool down, because people cannot maneuver for all that time without food, without peace, without sleep, without money, and so on. And they are just simply controlling us like that. And when you check, this country is just very unfortunate, because even the money we make, it is money for food and food for one day. So if I get food for today, I have to wake up very early tomorrow to get food for that day. And the same thing, I repeat that for 1 year, for 2 years, for 3 years. But if we could get some money, reasonable money, that probably I can be home for 1 week and still eat, still drink, still pay electricity, still pay TV and so on, it would be okay. But it is not possible and it is not a mistake. It is planned. So when Kampala is under siege, people are saying, okay, let's stop this so that we can go and work. Otherwise, if we continue, we will not work. And if we don't work, our children and ourselves will not eat. And that's what happens.
How is that? How do they control that? How do they make it so that you are, you know, because this is kind of the state of poverty. This is where you have to work every single day. This is the mentality of you need to have a job. And if that job ever goes away, if that job ever gets replaced or, you know, anything like that, then you have nothing. But there's,
yes,
but there's land and there's food. So like, how do they keep that power in place where you can't just survive off the land, but you have to work to get the money to, in order to survive?
You know, when I get $1, for example, $1 is equaling to 3,700 Uganda shillings. Many people in this country are living under or below $1, you can imagine. So you find that, for example, a matatu driver makes around 20,000 every day. When you divide 20,000 every day into the dollar, that is about $4 or $5. But this person is going to use his expenditure of that day for about $3 to $4. That is a single person. So you find that this person will not have money for tomorrow. And then it means he has to work to do the same tomorrow. You cannot easily get money in this country. And if you get the money, then the money is totally useless. If I tell you from my town to Kampala, I use 5,000 shillings to go to Kampala. And then I use 3,500 shillings to come back to my hometown. So in one day, I can spend about 20 or 25,000 Uganda shillings on myself. But then the money I earn every month is about 300,000 Uganda shillings. So you find that you are just working and keeping yourself busy, but you are not getting, and you can't save anything. So money has no value in this country. One eats lunch of about $5 a day, and that person works and gets probably $3 or $4 per day. So it doesn't work in that sense. So if you don't work every day, that means you cannot eat every day. You cannot, people who can eat without working are very few in this country, and those are the people working in the government. The rest of the people in this country, you must work every day, and then you get what to eat every day. If you don't work, you will not eat. That is the truth. And even some public servants, you find that you can work, and then they don't pay you for the next 3 months. And then when you are demanding about 5 months, then they give you money of 2 months. And then you have debit of about 3 months. So we are moving in a debit every now and then. And this is why this time around they have introduced a lot of microfinance to try to borrow money. You can easily borrow money maybe with your phone, or you go there and borrow money, then maybe you borrow and pay school fees for your child, and then you go work and pay slowly, slowly. But the moment you finish the first loan, you need another debit to continue doing the same, because right, you have no source of money.
Yeah, I was going to
say that. This is where the problem comes.
That's really dangerous too. That's one of the things that they do. You know, they do that in the U.S. They make loans for people who don't have any money, knowing that it's just going to force them into debt, and they're going to be perpetually borrowing more to repay. And it's really a bad system.
So you work. Yeah, you work day and night, but you don't earn. You don't get money. And what is another problem in this country is we, the young people, we are not considered, and we don't have jobs. If you go, for example, me, I graduated in 2017, but up to now, I don't have a genuine job. Why? Everywhere I go to apply, there are so many people who have applied. On one job vacancy, about 500 people can apply. And then when you get there, they ask for experience. But I'm from the campus and I don't have experience. But they want experience of 5 years. And now you need to wait to make experience. And when you make experience, these people are still in those offices and they are lotting. This is why we are having member of parliament who are 90 years, who are 70 years. We are having public servants who are 70 and above. We have tax drivers who are 90 and above. And because everyone needs that particular job. No one is willing, they want to retire. Even the president himself, you see, he doesn't want to retire, but he's getting to 90 years. And this is where the problem is. The money we get is just for that day. If you can't get the money for that day, then you don't have money at all. So this is how they are controlling. We have total poverty in the country that someone with a wife and rent and some 2 children cannot sufficiently care for that family. And it is a very small family, as you can see, but someone cannot manage that family. This is why we have a number of orphans in the country, because many parents are actually killing themselves because they cannot serve to their children. Others have totally ran away, registering their students in the orphanages that you say you are an orphan when the father is there, but the father has totally nothing. This is why we have so many children not going to school, simply because there is no money. The first school in this country for primary is about $500 or 300 or 400, about 800 Uganda shillings or 900 Uganda shillings to take a child in the school. But then you find someone have 3 children, has a wife, they don't have house, they have to rent, they have to pay TV, they have to pay electricity, they have to pay water, you have to pay transport, you have to pay medical, and so on. This is too much for someone who doesn't have money, and they end up failing. And when they fail, this is what you are saying, and this is what it spreads on the global news, that orphanage and so on. Even myself, I grew up in an orphanage, and it helped me with school fees and so on. And this is how I managed to study. Otherwise, if it wasn't that organization, maybe I could not go to school. So this is what happens, and that is how they have managed to control it for over time, because now it is getting to 33 years of the same president and same government.
Wow. So one thing I just have one more question for you, and then we're gonna wrap it up. And actually, before I ask that question, I put a link in the video. So right now you're doing a fundraiser, for all of your efforts for putting on events, for your travel expenses, for everything else. We have this link. It's a GoFundMe page. If you're listening and if you want to help out with this effort, definitely go follow that link and make a donation. If all you can do is $5 or $10, that's going to be a huge help. We've so far, there's $240 raised. So it's, you know, it's going pretty good. People are donating anywhere from $10 to one person donated $90. So, whatever you can, it's a small, even a small amount is going to help a huge amount in getting this information out to so many people who really need it, because they're, you know, this is a place where obviously government oppression is keeping people in this position of, not having the knowledge that they need to be able to survive on their own without government. So my question for you is, because there's this is how I see the world, right? There's so much land. There's enough land for everybody. There's farmland. There's, you know, if we had access to land, anybody should be able to live off of that land. There's farmland. You can produce food. And of course, you know, you talk about having to work every day, and of course it's still work having to harvest food and cook it and prepare it. Whereas when you buy it from a store or a restaurant, there's already so much work that's gone into it. But my question for you is the government kind of creating that circumstance? Are they limiting access to land? Are they making, is it expensive to farm? Do you have to be a member? Like, do you have to have like some special government permission to take new land or to farm on land or to, you know, to any of this? Is government kind of helping to create a scarcity of the food so that it is more expensive or that you have to continue working so hard to be able to afford it?
Okay, this is what I have to say about that question. First of all, most of the land, especially the central land where I come from, my region, land is owned by people, and anyone is free to make some kind of farming and produce food. But this is what happens. You need to making up a farm or making growing up crops and producing them needs a lot of investment. For example, you have to buy seeds themselves, then you have to buy medicine for cypress, then you have a lot of things. And then when the fruits or food is ready, then you have to get it from the farm, prepare it very well, and transport it to the capital city, for example, or the nearest town to buy. What happens is, because fuel is so much expensive, by the fuel in my country is so expensive, people who come to get that food from the village or those who transport it from the village to the capital give the farmer very less. Why? Because they have to count for fuel that they use. For example, in my capital city, Kampala, they normally get matoke. Matoke is staple food for Uganda, from Mbalala. When you check, Mbalala is about 200 kilometers away from the capital city. So you find that a bunch of banana, which is sold at 20,000 Uganda shillings in Kampala, is being got from a farmer in the village at about 5,000 Uganda shillings. So you see that there is a difference of 15,000 Uganda shillings. And when you ask the person who is now selling it in Kampala to the final consumer, he says, I am getting a profit of 3,000 Uganda shillings. That means 12,000 Uganda shillings is going on fuel and transport. Fuel and then the vehicle itself, because many are not using their vehicles. So it goes there. And when you check, it is about 18% tax to the government. So you see there is a way that farming is there, but not reliable. Not everyone who produces that is going to get money. It is also expensive to farm in this country. And also, we've got people who have a lot of money, especially those who work in the government, and then the foreigners, like the Indians and then the Chinese. What they do when we have a lot of maize, we have a lot of rice, we have a lot of sugar, we have a lot of, they get to the market, they buy all these produces, they keep them in their stores. Now they make the country to face a shortage, or rather, is it a shortage of food? Now they bring it back on the market, claiming that they are getting the rice from Kenya and Tanzania, they are getting the maize from maybe Tanzania or Kenya and so on, and then they sell it to us so expensive. For example, one time I bought a kilo of sugar at 8,000 Uganda shilling. This is about merely $3 or $2.5. But normally a kilo of sugar used to be in about $0.9. So you see that this is what they do to control this kind of system, so that even the smallest money we have is taken away from us. When you check, to take you back a bit, when you check the education system of this country, we have schools in grades. We have grade A, grade B, grade C, grade D, and so on. If you want your child to study in, for example, first schools or second group schools, that is A and B, you have to come with about 1 million or 1.5 million for these students. And this money is asked for only us, the common people. These people, these children of these people in the government are not actually paying school fees, because the schools are owned by the people in the government. Most of the schools, the good schools in this country, are owned by the people in the government. So they put their children or the children of their friends or children of their other family members into these schools. And if at all they don't own these schools, then those students are having government scholarship and state house scholarship. So they are getting themselves out of poverty and they are creating opportunities for them, but then making life difficult for us, the common people. And the money they collect from us in form of tax is being used to facilitate the other people and other families and other friends of theirs. So this is how they have managed to control this. And nothing is really simple for anyone in this country, so long as you don't work in the government. And this is how also these other things like fuel or paraffin. Last time we used to use paraffin at home for lighting, but nowadays we cannot buy paraffin because paraffin is as expensive as petrol. So what we reverted on is to buy candles, for example. But you buy one candle for 500 shillings and it can light for about 30 minutes, then you buy another one. So if electricity goes, or if you don't have electricity, then that means in one night you are likely to use four candles. Four candles, this is about 2,000 Uganda shillings, which could buy a liter of paraffin by the other times of our parents. So this is how they have managed to do that. And farming is no longer reliable. So people, what they did is to run away from farming, coming to Kampala to fight for money. This is why we are having so many teenagers or youths from the village coming to Kampala, getting bikes, boda matatu on a loan, and then they drive matatu around Kampala so that they can earn money. But still they don't earn money because they have to pay a lot of money to pay the loan of the bike. By the time you finish up the loan of the bike is very old, you need a new one, and you repeat the process. So this is what happens.
Right.
And
the if I recall correctly, the tax on vehicles, so like if you want to buy a motorcycle, it's manufactured in another country and the government charges a really huge tax just to buy that, is that right?
Yes, I have some friends in Japan. I have ever been in Japan in some years back in 2006. I went to Japan. I have so many people there I know, and I have friends there. What happens is that when you buy a car, for example, in Japan, maybe you can buy that car at about $1,500. Then a ferry can bring for you to Dar es Salaam or Mombasa for about another, to make about 3,500. But when you get to bring it to Kampala, then the government is going to double or triple the whole cost of the car from Japan to Kenya. For example, most of the cars that we buy in Uganda for about $5,000, they are about $1,500. So the 3,500 is almost tax only. Money that can buy two or three vehicles is used to buy just one vehicle. And it is not enough. You have to pay every month. You pay tax every month, and then a lot of things on the load. You have to pay this, you pay that. And these days, the government is even building loads that you need to pay daily every time you use. For example, the Kampala Entebbe Expressway. You need to pay 5,000 Uganda shillings to just use that road, which is about 30 kilometers.
Right.
And that's to go the one that expressly to them.
That was built by the Chinese, right?
Yes. They disguise that it is built by the Chinese. But for us, we know that the money belongs to the taxpayers' money. And the Chinese is just put there as an investor. And then we have to pay. Because if they don't put that one as an investor, then it is not in the constitution that we have to pay loans. So now they have to bring the Chinese to claim that he built that road and so on, and then he's collecting his money back.
Wow. All right. Well, I'd love to keep talking to you, but we're kind of at our time for the show for today. But we'll definitely have you back on again sometime. And it's been great talking with you. There's some great information. Hopefully everybody can kind of see, you know, and learn from this and see, you know, what's going on in different parts of the world, that it's really the same thing sometimes with just a different spin on it, a different story. But it's, you know, it's really all the same thing. People in power are, you know, they're taking money from everybody else and they're using that money to make their lives better for themselves. Meanwhile, they're telling us that they're helping us. They're working for us.
Yes. Yeah, the government working for us.
Right. Yeah. It's not exactly the way it's going. But thank you again, Iga, so much for coming on the show and for talking about this. If you can, go to the link and make a donation. Like I said, anything you can do, $5, $10, $20, $50, will be a huge, huge help to spread this information of liberty across all of Africa. So please go make a donation if you can. And until next time, taxation is theft. I'll see you soon. Yeah.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Rhodes.
You boys like